Hello and welcome to Radio Edutalk. This is David Noble in Dalgety Bay, and tonight we've got a special show around the developing the young workforce agenda or programme within Scottish education. And I'm delighted to welcome from Education Scotland Joan Mackay, Andrew Miller, and Mary Thompson. Good evening.
Evening, David.
And over the next 25 minutes or so, as I say, we'll be talking around developing the young workforce, specifically within Scotland. If you're listening near or from afar, you can get in touch with the live show in two ways. You can email edutalker, that's edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk. Or if you're on Twitter, you can pop something up with the hashtag Edutalk. Now, starting with Joan, and then Andrew, and then Mary, would each of you just give us a kind of brief background to who you are and what you do within Education Scotland?
Yeah, sure, David. My substantive post is with Education Scotland. They're the people who pay my wages. But for the past year, and since the Road Commission published its report, I've been working on a 50-50 secondment between Scottish Government and Education Scotland, because of the complexity of the programme. It's a big programme, it's a really big push to change things. So I'm working around the whole school delivery end of it.
And Andrew?
But my background, David, I'm a seconded teacher from Bathgate Academy in West Lothian. That's my substantive post, and following from that, I was a More Choices, More Chances officer with that local authority as well. So I'm in a seconded position as team leader and development officer within the skills team, and my kind of main piece of work has been around the work placement standard, as well as working across a number of local authorities. But I think we'll probably get into the detail of that piece of work as we go.
Hello, David. My name's Mary, and I'm working at the moment in the skills team, seconded to that from a deputy post in Glasgow City Council. So I've been working over the last year on the key education standard and taking that forward in local authority from the next year, 15-16.
Thanks very much. And just to start off with, and I know it's difficult because we're in four different locations, but whoever wants to jump in first, can for the benefit of again maybe our international listeners or listeners who are maybe new to the profession, can you just explain what developing the young workforce programme is? Where did it originate, and who's the whole kind of agenda, for want of a better phrase, aimed at?
Yeah, I'll kick off with that one, David. Scotland, the UK, like quite a lot of countries in Europe, has a real issue with youth unemployment. By youth, we mean young people in the 16 to 24 bracket. And that's, of course, not helped at the moment by the downturn in employment and what's going on across Europe, apart from, of course, Germany and Austria and Switzerland, who have specific ways of dealing with this. So I guess, you know, the government had felt it had to tackle it, and we've tried this several times, but you'll probably all be aware that the Commission City and Wood lead a group, and they reported last June. And just to give you a headline figure, you know, last June, 53,000 young people were not in work or employment or further education. So that's a huge number if you compare 53,000 with the number of kids in first year just now. There's about 55,000. So it's basically a whole year's worth of children. The numbers were better this June, again, because of the economic situation. But that's the scale of the issue. And what the Commission called for or asked the government to deal with was, in effect, system change and cultural change. It's a fairly huge ask. And the Scottish Government accepted all the recommendations, and they put a plan in place, which is called Developing the Young Workforce, and that includes the Youth Employment Strategy. And that came out in December of last year. So we're coming up for, at the end of this year, that plan will have been in place for a year.
And many of our listeners would be practicing teachers within Scottish education. So, what kind of, can you take us through some of the recommendations that both your, you know, you're involved in yourself in taking forward, and which recommendations, you know, should we as a teaching profession be acutely aware of and indeed be involved in taking forward?
Yeah. Well, I suppose the first thing I would say to teachers is to, you know, always be aware of their place in all of this, because it is a vast programme which spans colleges, employers, and the employers is a big one. So let's come back to that one maybe later on in the programme, but that's significant, as well as schools. Because I noticed that every time we give teachers the plan, they tend to turn to the chapter on schools, and yet the most useful thing is to look at all the interplay between all the plans. But if I focus in for a teacher in school just now, and again, this is based a lot on feedback that teachers themselves gave us. So we spoke to teachers, and what also was important, we spoke to a lot of young folk. And what we realised was that there's a really big ask about focusing on skills. I mean, people basically said that BTC4, as we call it, Building Curriculum 4, was completely overlooked. It kind of got lost along the way for all reasons we could explain. And they said, can you please look at that again? Because, of course, that highlights skills for work as well as skills for learning. So that was the biggest and most interesting aspect in the system. It came very loudly from early years in primary, interestingly, who felt they'd been doing a lot on that and they weren't getting it acknowledged or seeing the links through into children's understanding about the world of work. And then, of course, what we're finding is that in secondary, a lot of teachers are asking exact same questions. You know, what do we do with these skills that the children are acquiring? So, big ask on that. That's the first thing, I suppose, I would say to teachers, to be aware of the skills they are already teaching and to help young folk make the connection between all these skills and the world of work. And I suppose, David, I'm kind of talking too much here, but I suppose one of the interesting things was that because, I don't know why, but maybe the title of it, but people had begun to divide out, they saw one part of skills being skills for learning and somewhere else another part being skills for work. And actually, if you do any analysis of what employers want, the match between what children are learning right now and young people and what they're going to need in the world of work, it's remarkably close. So there's something there to really capitalise and build on.
I'll come to Mary in a moment, but firstly, Andrew, what's your kind of involvement and what kind of work streams or strands are you you know, helping to take forward?
My area of work has been around enhancing the quality of work experience particularly around the senior phase. From all our research, it's quite clear that young people themselves were extremely dissatisfied with the current quality, the current offer, and the kind of traditional offer of undertaking a week long placement, work experience placement in S4, not particularly planned out, but a fixed time in the year, and parents and young people in particular, and employers, were keen that was changed and became a much more meaningful process, a lot more structured, a lot more planned, with project-based tasks, you know, being undertaken in the workplace, which are of value to both the employer, like a bona fide real project, real task, a challenge that they need solved, as well as a young person, it's a real tangible benefit to them, a real piece of work. So there's a lot of work that's gone around that, and that's been built up over a number of months, which has kind of culminated in the launch of the workplace standard, which was released last week at the Scottish Learning Festival by Angela Constance. So the work that's now across the country starting to scope out and tease out ways of actually having different strategies and different approaches to ensure there's high quality work placements for all.
And what about yourself, Mary? What are you working on at the moment?
So at the moment, just like Andrew and Joan have indicated, the Standard for Career Education was also launched last week at the Scottish Learning Festival. At the moment, we're then thinking about how do we take that forward and build on the practice that's already in existence that Joan's indicated, to work in skills and building the curriculum forward in particular. So we're going to be working very closely as the standard was developed in partnership with Scottish Government and Skills Development Scotland. We too in Education Scotland are going to be taking that work forward and working with some early adopters across local authorities, across learning communities, and helping teachers to see the relevance of your education for them, both as primary, as early learning and childcare specialists, as subject specialists, and as guidance, and really catering some of the products that we develop in a co-design way with teachers and practitioners, so they feel that there's a role to play in shaping and designing that work to help make it supports and information that's really relevant to their practice, to help support them in delivering and implementing the career education standard. So really looking ahead to some exciting times where we've got a product, a document that's been launched, and we're looking forward to making it even more meaningful in the practice, in the classrooms and settings of teachers and practitioners in 15-16.
I'll just say at this point that if you're listening to a live show, you can actually link to the kind of main page for developing the young workforce on the Education Scotland website. I'm sure you can do a web search yourself, but if you're on the EduTalk website, up at the blue banner near the top, there is a hyperlink if you just click on developing the young workforce. If you're listening to the podcast, then the link to that particular web page will be just underneath the audio player if you want to click along while we're listening to our guest this evening. So I'm wondering, you know, there's a role for everyone, and I know that as with many government reports, the Education Scotland reports, they focus in on, you know, the kind of responsibilities of employers, for example, for practitioners in schools, parents and carers even. I'd like to kind of just focus in on the kind of primary, maybe even early years. I know that the kind of through the posters and through the literature, there's reference to employers playing a role in the curriculum. Early years and primary. So I'm wondering if there's any guidance on how this should be done differently from in the past, and indeed if there's any kind of good examples that we've come across so far.
Yeah, I'll start that one off, and then Mary, you can come in on some of the practical stuff that we've kind of found on the ground. The other piece of work, because we've now mentioned the two standards, but the other piece of work really importantly was guidance for school employer partnerships, and that document there to search out as well. And what that did was it built on all the existing good practice and almost drew out the principles, you know, what works best. So it offers a spectrum from an employer who can offer, say for instance, an hour to a school, and that's to come in and talk about what they're doing at whatever stage, and that goes on, of course, as we know, from the early years right through to, you know, the bigger ask much later on, which is about employers being involved in senior phase planning and developing the curriculum. So that guidance is there too. So it comes as a package to help people see their way through that. So Mary, do you want to pick up on a couple of kind of practical examples of, you know, where we've seen employers working at the early and primary years?
Yes, certainly. Just so that you're aware, we had very much the work that we're talking about does start very much at the early years, as you said, David, with the diagram. And interestingly enough, just last week at the Scottish Learning Festival, we had practitioners from three schools sharing their experience, because we're not starting this from scratch. We are building on a strong foundation. So, for example, in the Pre-5 Centre, we were hearing the practice where children are... they are building and just going about their everyday life, and they're playing, and they're seeing playing as it's a child's job to play. We're not fabricating something that's false, but we're actually going for the children's direction, just as you would expect at that stage. So the children here in Fergusley were building dog houses, designing them, visiting the secondary school to work out how to do it better, to build the 3D model, and also they were building, growing various items in the community garden. They were bringing that into the nursery or early learning childcare kitchen. They were visiting the employees in the local community, and then they were setting up a fruit and veg stall and making soup and selling their products. So we were seeing some real examples of students' interest in learning was being extended in a natural way and in a contrived way at all. But also in primary schools, and some of the examples there from learning and healthcare setting can be seen on the professional learning community that Susan Samuelson have set up in Education Scotland. So that's maybe worth a look for listeners. But also in the primary examples, we've heard from examples that we've shared through events with, for example, through the Scottish Education Awards, where people are in primary schools are linking with the local employers, they're linking with the local colleges, and they're opening up children's horizons and possibilities to what's out there. So really taking a forward look, but using also the networks and the possibilities in the local community, and of course drawing on the parent body also for their involvement and engagement too. So some real practical examples, and I'm more than happy to share some of that through the blog as well. We've got lots of examples of really interesting practice from a local and an urban and a rural context also.
And I think, right back to the commission report, there was talk about the need to co-design learning experiences. And, if anyone feel free to come in at this point, but there's obviously real difficulties and kind of practicalities around co-designing with people from the third sector or from industry or from the local council. So, again, what kind of strategies are folk using to actually get around that? I'm sure we all agree with the principle of co-designing learning experiences with members of our community, with businesses, etc. But how is that actually being done when we're also hearing that there's so many sort of increasing constraints on time, etc., and resources?
Yeah, I think David, that's the big challenge, and it's an exciting challenge. CFE, I suppose, opened up all of that in terms of setting out the entitlements the way back when it did that. And it feels to me that what Developing the Young Workforce is doing is shining a really strong light on that final push to get a lot of that curriculum thinking in place. And I suppose one of the things that we're, and this in a way is us going into the next stage of the work, how do we support, and it would be great to hear from listeners about how we do this most effectively. How do we support curriculum design that takes on board all the options that we would want to have in order to fulfil the needs of the young people so that we don't have, the equivalent of a whole year group leaving without a clear direction. And it's the whole issue, of course, then of building in far more options in terms of what people refer to as vocational pathways, but it's expanding that curriculum to meet the needs of the young folk in the actual school. So, and then that, of course, demands that you're asking there. It means that you have to build partnerships, really partnerships that will sustain placements and will sustain learning over a long period of time with colleges, with training providers. And there's a whole world out there of options. And how do you make that work? And I'm not going to give you the answer. I mean, I don't think we've got the answer to that now, but we do know that where people have made it work, the results and the outcomes for young people are really, really good. And we've got enough practice to start with, but that's the big part of the journey. And you're talking there about co-design and co-production. One of the things that I suppose we've learned really acutely over the past year is how much rich resource there is there, which we in the education sector don't necessarily tap into. By that I mean things like labour market intelligence. There's really good stuff out there that tells you what's going on in your own locality, in your own region. And we've only begun to almost dip into that and test that out with teachers, with young folk themselves. What are they getting out of that? What are they finding out? And can they make connections between what they know about their local area, what they know about Scotland, and what they're learning in school? And that's a really interesting discussion to have. So, yeah, that's the next big piece of work.
And Andrea, Joan's talking about the need for kind of sustainable relationships between employers and schools, and maybe that brings us on to the work placement standard. Is that one of the features or one of the expectations that there are sustained relationships where we can build up over time, and we can actually move beyond just as mentioned in the website, the kind of standalone week-long experience. And can you take us through what the kind of main features of the new work placement standard is?
The way it's been shaped up is that there's four key parties involved
in the success of any work placement is obviously the young person themselves, the employer, which we're all very aware of that, those two partners. There's a school or local authority or a bit of both, depending on what happens in your locality, because in some areas the local authority coordinates work placement centrally. In other places, it's done purely by the school. So they're obviously part of it as well. And quite often, a weaker link in it is the parent or the carer aspect as well, because they're absolutely integral to whether an opportunity of a placement actually works or not, based on a whole range of things and how they support and champion and encourage, motivate and what have you. So it was how to build up the expectations across those four key bodies. And it was done through setting a series of expectations for each of these key stakeholders in the process. The expectations are set out very clearly. They have to be undertaken in advance of the placement, what has to be done during a placement, and what happens after the placement. And they're very much set up to squeeze every possible little bit of learning out of any given work placement to the benefit, not just to the young person, but to everybody who, you know, the four main parties we spoke about there, but also expanding it out to sharing that learning across practitioners in the school, and sharing that learning of the modern workplace and sharing it down into earlier years in the secondary as well.
And I look at the standard at the moment, Andrew, and it seems to tie in a little bit with some of SQA units that I was familiar with in years gone by. Is there an expectation that by kind of going through the preparation, then the work experience and the kind of review afterwards, that the young people should kind of naturally be given the opportunity to get some kind of accreditation?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a wide range of certification available around placements, but we're working very, very closely with SQA on revising the existing work experience units, which have been around for a bit of time, and that piece of work's already underway. So that's units at levels SCQF levels 3 to 6 that are being revised in line with the new standards. So there'll be a similar kind of language and feel, and there'll be a new piece of certification there aligned to what we're hoping is a variety of new approaches to this as well.
Oh, that sounds great. And within the documentation, it talks about the need for guidance and support for teachers and to be given by teachers to S3 pupils around kind of finding, applying for a job, etc. And there's also talk about the kind of need to educate and the responsibilities and duties of the employer and the employee. Would it be your hope, Andrew, that these things would be covered through the build-up, then the actual work placement, and then the kind of weeks after? Or does this need to be a feature of the curriculum in the years subsequent to a work placement and also years before the work placement?
I think that builds right the way through. That's very much a 3 to 18 slant rather than just happening in S3. Mary, you might want to come in at that point actually, just to talk a bit more about how that knowledge and expertise builds up over, you know, over time, over those stages.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when we were forming the standard for the career education, we were realising, obviously, that recommendation came out from the Wood Commission, and it was granted by the Implementation Youth Employment Strategy. But what we were realising was it's not just a fixed one point in time that children or young people in SD can demonstrate that knowledge, but that has to be acquired from the earliest stages, building up what children have learned and known and experienced in their development and skills round about the workplace. We've heard from primary schools, and we know the practice about children applying for roles and jobs and leadership opportunities in primary schools. So it's just taking that one step further, and that young people are being able to extend that learning and apply it in a relevant, meaningful way to the world of work. And we know in primary schools that children have been applying for jobs and being interviewed by employers as part of their learning about the world of work. So it's about taking that one step further. And yet, when it comes to the work placement or making subject choices or applying for training opportunities, that the young people will be able to actually apply those skills to those contexts. but we're not doing it in isolation. We're very much building on what's already out there and the knowledge and the expertise in pastoral and support teachers, and also building on the expert knowledge that the Skills Development Scotland and the career coaches have. So it's about drawing that all together in a coherent package that young people will be able to apply the skills and the knowledge that they have, not only to be able to demonstrate that, but to then take it forward in their workplace and experience, as Andrew has said.
And if we kind of stick with the kind of developments in career education, Joan, I understand there's been some kind of review around the My World of Work website, and that there may be kind of future developments in that area.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I mean, when we were doing the career education standard, bear in mind that we had the evidence from inspections, because there were these SIAG inspection reviews had been going on. SIAG stands for Career Information Advice and Guidance. So that had been going on for about a year and maybe 18 months. So we were getting really good evidence out of that, what worked, what didn't work. And what we also knew, and we were keeping a kind of close eye on that, was that there was a review of My World of Work. Now, My World of Work, remember, is a universal service, so it spans right across. It's not just a school thing. And so it was looked at from the perspective of a community use. So how does it work in the totality of a community and who uses it? So that was great, just to be aware that that was going on and to get some of the early preliminary findings of that. And that really pointed as well, you know, which kind of was very reassuring for us. We're going in the right direction of travel. And it's very practical. If you go into My World of Work, it's actually more or less saying, you know, have some, put some thought into how you do this in schools. And, you know, I'll give you one funny and wry observation. You know, in a couple of schools, they found that young folk were getting their careers advice in a cupboard, you know. So somebody created a space in a cupboard that was full of stuff. And, you know, somebody was questioning then, well, what does that tell them about this particular part of their education? So whereas in other places, people were making it fully part of the learning and it was an integral part of what they were doing. So the really interesting things in that. But also just to say that my World Serve as a website, we're looking at how we can, in a kind of longer term way, use the technology that underpins all of that and get it working with, for instance, Glow, so that young people, and I'll give you a practical example, so that a child in primary 6 or in primary 7, and we've done quite a lot of trials out with young folk to see if they're up for this, if they were wanting to get an indication of what their skill set was at that stage, you know, what is it I'm good at, what is it I would like to be, or something about their aspirations, then there's lots of tools around that can be hosted on My World of Work that they can use, which would then translate into their profile on primary 7. And then if you follow the logic of that through, they would take that with them then into secondary and all they've learned about that, and, you know, their language and confidence and skills and talking about them. And then you can see how that would follow through into their S3 profile, still using My World of Work, so that if they're both talking to each other. And that would then ultimately end up in a, you know, an exit almost CV type profile. So that's quite an exciting strand of work because, you know, it's just two good things coming together.
Now, the final question from myself, I'm not going to attribute these comments to anybody, but I have spoken to a couple of people in the last few months who have kind of lamented the fact that the whole agenda, DYW agenda, has come at this kind of stage within the evolution, so to speak, of Curriculum for Excellence. I just wonder if you agree with these particular individuals that, you know, the great work that's going on just now really should have come in several years ago around the kind of commencement of CFE.
Well, yeah, I think that's an interesting one. I wouldn't be lamenting it. Only I'd be lamenting it because it was kind of an opportunity which could have been picked up earlier. I don't know. Remember that, you know, for senior phase policy, for instance, we're still working with the entitlements that were set out 3-4 years ago. They still hold good about sustained and positive destinations. This obviously asks us to look more closely at that and more realistically at it. It still talks about the entitlement to skills of work. So if you go back and look at that, you know, which is one of the things I've been doing, it's fascinating that it still holds, but we haven't fulfilled it. So if you can think of that, you know, we've been, and we know why, we kind of have a long debate just now about, you know, new qualifications and things, but let's not do that. But we know that the moment something like that comes, it focuses and it narrows your focus. But what actually developing the young workforce does is shine a very strong light on, if you want, the fulfillment, the bit we have to finish off. So that's the way I'm seeing it. And I could be bold and say it's been like climbing a mountain and we've kind of got the peak and, you know, the summit in sight. So, but I'm not a good enough little climber on a mountain here to follow that one through. So I'll get into trouble.
I mean, just to finish up, then, if we just maybe start with yourself, Joan, and then go to Mary and Andrew. You know, what are you hoping? What kind of effect are you hoping to have on the whole agenda? What would be a win from your perspective in, say, 2 or 3 years' time? How will things have changed for the better?
Well, for me, at one level, it's quite simple. It's that, you know, all these young folk who move into first and second and third year. Know they belong there. You know, they really know they belong there and that they're not in any way see themselves as the people who aren't the ones who are going to university or they aren't the ones who are going to make a certain, you know, success of something. So for me, that would be one of the, you know, that there's really positive choices, that there's clarity of esteem in the way we talk about all of their options. That would be real success, and that the options were there, David. You know, I mean, that is the challenge. And we know that in some schools the options are there, but we also know that in some others they're not there yet. And so, you know, part of our job with other people and with other partners is to help that happen. But what I do want to say before I hand over to Mary is that I've been around in education a long time, and I've not come across a big and major piece of work where there is a real will. You know, I talk about a kind of real moral imperative to do something about this. And I think what people are struggling with is the how, not why, or should we be doing it? And that's across the board. And this is what's really exciting, that, you know, you're having to go and explain some maybe, you know, particular education philosophy or some aspect of CAV to groups you normally wouldn't do it. Think about employers. So that's been the really interesting thing, that you're articulating this and all of these groups are wanting to do something about it. I really think we're in a specific moment in time which is there for us to grab. And I'm hugely positive about it and what it offers for all of our young folk and therefore for all of us.
Mary.
I mean, I think coming into the Jones point there, just about grabbing the future, and I think very much it comes back to the children as they start their education, a formal education from what is age 2, some of them, and 3 others, all the way through, that they really are encouraged to think in a diverse way about the opportunities and the pathways that are out there for them, and to help them do that and make the choices that are important choices that they make as they move forward in their education and their lives and their training opportunities. But to know that actually they're allowed to change and they can just develop, because many of us have, you know, changed jobs as many as 11 times, and that we're equipping children with the skills to be able to cope and prepare for their futures and enjoy their futures. But at the same time, that as parents, that we're supported with the right information and that teachers are helped and supported to help create those opportunities and deliver that for children and young people in the schools today and for the future.
And Andrew?
For me, it's all about the aspiration. It's helping young people aspire to achieve more than they think is actually possible, and creating that opportunities, tangible opportunity to succeed right the way through school and pathways beyond school. And I think it's all about that. And I'm hugely excited by employers being more involved in this process as well. And the regional groups, because there's regional groups for employers across the country, that's going to be a really, really significant aspect of this piece of work. So no longer are we working, schools working on their own, individually, trying to establish strong links with employers. There's a coordinated approach to that, a much more strategic approach. And I think there's significant merits and rewards that will come from that over time. But for me, it's really about supporting young people to aspire to achieve, to do their absolute best, And I think everything we've done so far is about setting those foundations so that a lot of the work can progress from there.
That's fantastic. Just to remind listeners, you've been hearing from Joan Mackay and Mary Thompson and Andrew Miller for Education Scotland this evening, talking around developing the young workforce. If you have any questions or comments in the days and weeks to follow, I'm sure you can get in touch via the Education Scotland website itself, or you can get in touch with EduTalk and we'll pass your comments or questions on just via the usual channels. So thanks very much for giving up your precious time this evening. It's been fascinating, and I'm sure it's a topic that I'd be keen to revisit in Radio EduTalk in the months and years to come. So thanks again and best wishes.